You're listening to a 95BFM podcast.
The International Olympic Committee, or IOC, guidelines that allow male-to-female transgender athletes to compete in women's category at the elite level have raised significant debate since being introduced in 2015. Today I spoke to three researchers from the University of Otago about some research they conducted around the topic. Admittedly, I have very little knowledge about transgender athletes and indeed transgender issues in general, which is why I felt compelled to conduct this interview in an attempt to find out more. However, when talking to the researchers, it became apparent that they could not comment on the social implications their research might have. For this reason, I have cut much of the content simply because keeping it in would add little to the conversation. Two separate interviews were conducted on two separate phone calls, which is why there may be some overlap in relation to the questions I ask. I will be following this topic up in the coming weeks because I feel the interview primarily explores the science behind transgender athletes, but does not address the issue of identity adequately enough. Here is that interview. What are the current International Olympic Committee guidelines around the inclusion of transgender athletes?
So in 2015, they were changed. Prior to that, trans athletes had to have gender affirmation surgery. So in 2015, that went. That's no longer required. Requirements are that their testosterone levels have to be under 10 nanomoles per litre for 1 year.
So they have declared for sporting purposes their gender to be female for at least 4 years, and their blood testosterone levels are below 10 nanomoles for at least 12 months prior to competition. So that's what the 2015 guidelines state. And that is a change from 2004, when you had to have gender affirmation surgery.
Why did you conduct the research in the first place?
Probably because we were a little bit thinking about the fact that there are two principles at play here. One of them is the principle of fairness, and the other one is the principle of inclusion. And we could see that some of the ways that the IOC have set things up have been more about fairness, and sometimes it's been more about inclusion. And I don't think necessarily there, and in the literature, there is perhaps a lack of understanding of the need to balance these two competing principles.
What kind of changes would you propose to the current IOC guidelines?
Well, it's hard because the IOC guidelines, they're in a difficult position trying to write these guidelines. But what we're proposing is perhaps we should stop trying to push and squeeze people into just two categories. Maybe we should rethink the structure of sport so that it can accommodate people of all different types. And so maybe we should be thinking and reconsidering the gender binary. Yeah, and so we're suggesting something more nuanced than the gender binary currently allows for.
So what has your research found?
The research is showing that trans female athlete has a prior male physiology. And what we mean by that is that we can't just simply take the testosterone level in the here and now, but we have to consider the exposure to testosterone over their entire lifetime. So testosterone, even in utero, is predisposing male brains to be more competitive and more aggressive, which then leads to competitive advantage later in life. It's also setting them up to have bigger bone structure and a different bone structure that can help with some sports. It's helping them to have more muscle mass, which again will help with athletic performance. It also sets them up to have a more efficient cardiovascular and respiratory system. Again, all of this contributes to athletic performance. So when a trans female transitions to a female by taking estradiol therapy to lower the testosterone level to 10 nanomolar, none of that male physiology that had existed since they were basically a fetus goes away. So while the testosterone level is lower than when they were in a male physiology, the net effects of having that testosterone level for such a long time is not mitigated by 1 year of estradiol therapy. And this includes muscle mass and bone strength, especially.
Why did you initially decide to conduct the research?
initially it was out of a fairness issue, just looking at trans female athletes and how they were starting to dominate some female sports, and just having a look at what is male physiology that would be kept during someone who's transitioning to a female athlete, and just, you know, trying to look at the fairness issue of, well, will all of that prior male physiology advantage be mitigated by hormone therapy? And if it's not, then, you know, what is that percentage difference between a female athlete and a male trans female athlete? So if we look at world records, male athletes completely dominate female world records. So there's a 10% difference in endurance sports. There's up to 30% difference in sports that rely on strength. So if we consider that, a trans female athlete has to lose basically 30% of her prior athletic advantage to be competitive against a female, a biologically born female athlete. And it's very hard to see how a 30% difference can be taken away by simply having some estradiol therapy.
What changes do you propose to the current IOC guidelines?
First of all, I'd like to see the IOC guidelines lowered, so the testosterone level should not be at 10 nanomolar. This is at least tenfold higher than a female athlete. The other thing I'd like to see is the length of time for the estradiol therapy. At the moment, it's just 1 year, and there's evidence out there to show that after 1 year, there isn't any mitigation or enough mitigation in muscle mass and other physiological factors, so it should be extended out at least beyond a one-year period. And finally, I would like to think that in a society where we're trying to embrace diversity, that instead of trying to force everyone into a male and a female division, that we could create divisions where gender-diverse people could be competitive and feel like they're competing in a safe space.
You mentioned you consider some possible solutions within the research. So a couple of them, the potential solutions include excluding trans women from competing in a women's division, creating a third division for trans women and intersex women, and calculating a handicap for trans women based on their testosterone levels. Do you think that that is counterproductive in the sense that they have transitioned, so they are now women?
So socially they are women, but they would still not be considered a biological female. So we have to make that division between what society accepts as a woman compared to the scientific version of a biological female. And I think that's where the debate is arising.
So, at the start of that interview, that was Associate Professor Lindley Anderson and Dr. Tara Knox, and for the remainder of the interview, that was Professor Alison Heather. Like I said at the start of my piece, I will be following this topic up in the coming weeks because I feel like I didn't really explore the social implications of what the research might have. So, thank you.
That was a 95BFM podcast. To hear more, head to 95BFM.com/bcasts.